I think it's important to get that quote exact. Here is what Louis says. I'm not killing anymore. That's it. That's the tweet. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he said. Greetings and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast dedicated to recapping and reacting to AMC's new television series that reimagines Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and is also part of the AMC's Immortal Universe. In each episode, hosts Joanne Palumbo, Christina LaRusso, and myself, Mark Snedeker, summarize the episode, talk about Easter eggs, discuss standout characters, interrogate inconsistencies between the book and the series, dissect our favorite characters and their arcs, and provide a body count. Please join us now as we dive into episode 3, Is My Very Nature That of the Devil? And now I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
Snedeker.
What's up?
What's going on?
Welcome, Joanne. Welcome, Joanne Palumbo.
Hi, friends.
Okay, so episode 3 is now in the bank. Let's go to Joanne to see what her hot take is.
Loved it, loved it, loved it. The character arc of Louis and Lestat this week's episode was everything. We got to really dive really deep into both of them, and I'm loving what I'm seeing. And Lestat is his narcissist, crazy ass is showing, and Louis is spiraling, and I'm loving it. How about you, Christina?
This one was the best so far for me.
Because?
I just thought you're really starting to see Louis' struggle. You're really starting to see Lestat being the brat prince that he is. It's almost like, you know how when you start out in a relationship and you have that honeymoon period, and then after a while, the masks drop and people are starting to be more real. That's what I felt like was going on in this episode with both of them and also with Daniel. I love the way that all of the relationships in this series are evolving. And it's only 3 episodes in, so they're evolving fairly quickly. On all fronts, there's work being done on all of the character arcs, and I love it. Plus, at the end, Claudia, we have our first glimpse of your girl, Joanne.
I know. I'm so excited. At the end, the last thing I wrote is the end of Storyville and the beginning of Claudia in like big, bold letters. I was so excited. I'm like, yes, here we go.
So the way I look at this episode, I kind of think of it as lost and found. Louis is losing a lot. He's losing his family. It's tough to come back from kicking the door in. He's lost his business. He's lost the pretended goodwill from the white business owners. And he's got some cracks. Obviously, you see some cracks appearing in the relationship between Lestat and Louis. At the end, when a lot of the reasons for a lot of Louis's motivation, his family, his business are now in the tank, he found something to live for, we believe. You know, she's now in his arms at the end of the episode. So we're all excited to see where that goes. And I thought it was interesting that they decided to have Louis just kind of go in there and rescue her, right? She wasn't presented to him as a gift by Lestat. So that will have ramifications, I'm sure, in the future, too. So great episode.
They're doing such a really good job moving it along quickly. I don't feel cheated. Like, I feel like everything is playing out in a good way in terms of storytelling, but it is going quick, which I do appreciate because now we're finally getting to the good part of Claudia.
You just want Claudia so badly.
You've been talking about Claudia since before the series started.
Because we know she's going to be such a little bitch. And I'm just like, yes, come on, let's go.
And so why don't we now take a quick break for the first ad from our sponsor, Rat Sniff Humane Pest Removal, for our Easter egg of the week.
Easy for you to say.
Rat Sniff Humane Pest Removal. Is your rooming house or brothel overrun with pesky rodents? Rat Sniff is here to help. We are the only pest removal service in New Orleans to use humane methods to trap and dispose of these unsightly pests. Come by our shop on Basin Street to meet with our skilled staff to discuss our monthly service plans. Discreet deliveries of rodents are available to laboratories and keepers of exotic pets. No questions asked.
All right. So we really struggled. We scrambled to find an Easter egg.
Oh, look how that worked. I can tell you they were not just rolling down the White House lawn for us to pick up.
I know that his screensaver means something. I don't know what it is.
Let's talk about that a little bit. When he goes to check the origin of the Wolverine blues,
on Daniel's computer,
you see his background. And it's of what looks like to me some kind of underground storage. Maybe it's a catacombs. Maybe it's a train or a subway station.
It has graffiti. So,
yeah. So it's a public place. It's got columns that are numbered.
Yep. So I have been looking. I can't find it. But if anyone knows, please shoot us a DM on Twitter. We are at @vampire_insider.
I just want to point out something about Wolverine blues with this episode. Mark, remember how last week you were saying that about the Don Pasquale? And you said that, you know, they're not choosing these things by accident.
Almost certainly not.
Right. What I found, and again, this is like a total leap, but Wolverine blues is actually a jazz standard by Jelly Roll Morton.
Right.
And when I dug deeper, it's also a song from a Swedish death metal band that also has a song called Night of the Vampire.
Aha! That's solid enough for me. I'm in.
All right, I'm not going to sell it anymore. Okay, good. So I spoke with Dorian today, who is lovely, by the way, has the best British accent. I was totally fawning over it. They're in this Discord chat, but they said that what the chatter is in this Discord is some speculation about Rashid, who is Louis's servant in present time. And they're speculating that that could be Armand that's actually masquerading as Rashid so he could, I don't know, fool Daniel. I don't know what the intent would be for it, but that's their theory. And or the penthouse is actually owned by Armand and he's actually lives with Armand. It was quite interesting to listen to it. And Dorian is not only a wonderful cosplayer, but really knows the book.
And I think that you said that Dorian mentioned this, and I've seen this on Reddit as well. And it was to do with Louis talking about how the last person he killed was in 2020. And there's speculation that it's Merrick Mayfair.
Which would be a great tie-in for the new series coming out in January, The Mayfair Witches.
Talking about the Armand theory, I don't hate that theory because remember last week we were talking, Joanne, and you said something about, well, they've got to do something to get them to travel because how else are they going to meet Armand?
Correct.
And I said, well, do they have to encounter him in the past? Couldn't he be a part of the future, the present day that Louis and Daniel are experiencing? So it could be.
It's just hard to understand how to justify the pretense because Armand, if he just wants to observe the reaction and be secret, just like watch from a secret knot hole, you know, I mean, like have a painting where he moves the eyeball and sticks his own eyeball in there, right? Yeah,
yeah. You know, Christina, a lot of the things I'm getting suspicious of you because there's been a few things that you've kind of predicted almost. Like,
yeah, you got to. Well, first of all, that's good instinct, right? You should
She's
be suspicious
great
of her.
Oh,
everyone
I
should
instinct,
be very okay. suspicious
she
of her.
She is very crafty and wily and a little sketch.
Super sketch.
Well, all true, but also in this case, no, it's just been some kind of good guesses. You know,
yeah, you're really good at it, though.
Yeah, well, thanks, Joanne. I appreciate that.
Now let's talk a little bit about the book versus the show. In the book, Louis kind of loses the plantation as it burns down. In the movie, of course, he loses his business interests. His home really isn't destroyed, but all of Storyville is burned down. And again, he's fleeing a fire. Right. So it's a little bit of a similarity, but also a different take. One difference that I've noticed is while Louis is clearly suffering and he's morally ambivalent about his new life and he's having problems with Lestat, he's having problems with his family, but it's not that level of whininess that you really see in the book where he's just woe is me. Every single decision he makes, he's racked by indecision.
He is struggling. There's a struggle. But the underlying emotion that I get from Louis is anger. In the book, it's not that. He's angry, but it comes out in this kind of very, it's sad, and it's just, there's just a lot of sadness. Remember, we talked about in the episode about the book, we talked about how it was just constant. He was constantly racked with guilt. Yeah. I was guilty about this and guilty about that. There's some of that, but it's just sort of the sadness about losing the connections that he wanted to maintain or had tried to maintain, but it was very difficult in this life. And Lestat foreshadowed that in episode 2 when Louis said, I got to go home. And Lestat said, that's going to be very difficult, which could mean literally that moment going home, but could also mean in the metaphorical sense of going home and maintaining that connection.
Look, Louis, now you are a blood-sucking predator who's going to live forever. It's a little hard to maintain the home fires, you know, in your relationship with your sister and her kids and everything when that's who you are. Because first of all, vampires, time is different for vampires. One thing I'm going to try to pay more attention to as this show progresses is the role of time, because that's really what the story of vampires is about. The challenge and often the source of their, you know, wealth and power is time. Mm-hmm. They have more time than any other creature. But you're absolutely correct in that he's angrier and frustrated rather than petulant and whiny.
I find that to be more realistic. And in fact, last week we talked about this. Lestat chose me because he likes that pushback. He knows that he's going to get that pushback. And it's not the same kind of petulant pushback. This is Louis standing up for himself and saying, you know, you took my life from me. I like the fact that this is that there's anger here because it makes him more interesting. If he was just whining, nobody would be rooting for him. I don't think they'd just
it's
be kind of like,
it's tough to identify with the character if they're just constantly complaining all the time.
Constantly a victim.
So, yeah, what I want to add in is kind of building off of what you both said about the obvious difference of Louis being from wimpy to not so much wimpy and whiny, is we got a grand kill out of him. You know, him killing the alderman was monumentous, and the way he did it and presenting his body. That's so different than book version of Louis. He didn't have that momentous kill like this character has in this adaptation. And I thought that was great. Remember when we were discussing about the show before it aired, and the only thing we knew were some little tidbits. And one of the things we knew was that Louis was going to be a pimp. And we said, you got to have a strong pimp hand. We knew he wasn't going to be the whiny, wimpy, emo Louis. The way that they're making him stronger, but yet still holding true to that whiny nature in a not so annoying way, is just makes for great TV. Because like you said, who the hell would want to watch it if he's just sitting there moping and being all broody?
Like, you can see his strength when he turns to Lestat there at the table. Remember the book, Louis, when he was, oh, I can't kill, and I'm gonna, you know, I can't stand it anymore. And it was just sort of this like hand. He was like in a faint because he couldn't really stand to kill anymore. And he's sitting with Lestat at a table at Azalea Hall, and he says, I'm not going to kill people anymore. That's it. I'm not going to do it. And Lestat says, well, okay. And then they go on this expedition to try and see if they could just kill bad guys. Well, Louis still can't do that. So he's put himself onto an all animal diet, and the cat got it.
Yeah. Yeah. The cat definitely made the body count. But, you know, one of the things I loved about Lestat's character arc this week was there were so many more little humorous moments built in. And again, not campy, done in a really great way. When Louis says to him, you know, that he's not going to kill, Lestat says to him, oh, so you're a fish that doesn't swim, a bird refusing to fly. And he says, you're going to struggle, and I fear for the feline population of New Orleans. That's funny.
Also, in this show, he is fully identifying as homosexual at this point, as far as we know. In the book, he fell in love with Babette. But here,
he has a booty call in the swamp. Like, Louis, you've got no game.
I know, really. It's like, so you drive me out to the bayou?
Like, bro, you're rich. I know. Like, okay, let's get a hotel room or something.
That's what I thought. But here's the problem.
Are you hiding me from your wife? Why are we out here in the woods? Oh, is that porn?
here was the...
Hold on, let me go grab that magazine real quick.
Here was the problem that I had with that scene. And this just goes to show you like how screwed up my mind is.
Well, I can't wait.
So I can suspend disbelief for the fact that they're vampires, you know, the whole nine, everything. What tripped me up was as Jonah is giving him a blowjob, he bites his own hand. And I'm like, at no point does Jonah look up and go, why is there blood dripping on my face?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's give Jonah at least a little bit of credit for attention to the task at hand.
Yeah, I guess.
And he was one mind.
Yeah. You know, that's how these things get done. So, you know, good for him. I applaud that.
Listen, as somebody who has been in the same position as Jonah, I can assure you
should see Mark.
Okay. As soon as you said as someone who, I'm like, oh, I don't need to hear this, do I? My sweet summer child, what are you saying about yourself?
I would have noticed if something was dripping on my head. I'd be like, where's that coming from now? Like, no pun intended.
Louis knows how to.
Wow, Joanne.
Is there
somebody else here? Like, where's this coming from? I don't get it. Here's the one thing, and I don't want to wait for us to talk about it later in case we don't, and I forget to mention it. My new term for a blowjob.
Face.
Well, he gave me face. He gave me some face.
Is what he said. I love it. I'm here for it.
Well, I don't need to know that either.
Mark, yeah, that's going to be my new thing. So if I'm in New Orleans, when we're in New Orleans, if you hear me say that to some like rando dude at the bar, like, hey, you want some face? Leave me alone. Okay.
Let me do my business.
Yeah. I'm like, sir, I'm gonna have to escort my friend out of here. She's had a couple too many hurricanes.
Okay. Here's one difference that I want to address, and that's how Claudia is about to be discovered and brought into their lives. Louis does this temperamental act and kills the alderman, and then as a result sets off all of this nonsense, which we'll get to. This is how he finds Claudia. In the book, he finds Claudia because he's having this crisis moment with Lestat, and he runs off from him, and he's trying to escape these thoughts. And so he gets to where in the plague section and that's where he finds Claudia with her dead mother. The temper tantrum in the book, I would argue that Louis has. He has one, but it's not really a temper tantrum as much as it is. I don't know what the hell he's finally going to give into his nature and kill this child.
Somebody. Yeah.
And he picks a child, and that's how Claudia is coming into his life. He's going to kill her.
Yeah. Eat her. Yeah.
And instead, the aggression is now taken out on the alderman, and Claudia is going to be somebody that he rescues and that rescues him.
Right. And that's a big part of the book's Claudia arc, is her resentment toward Louis and Lestat for basically killing her and turning her into a vampire while she's a child. Now she has a harder time really justifying that anger because Louis leapt through a fire and saved her from certain death.
Now, of course, that fire was caused because of his capricious temper outburst. Right.
Yeah, that was funny. It wasn't intended to be funny, but that was a funny scene. He and Lestat are talking about them burning down Storyville. And he's like, I didn't see that coming, he says, about the most foreseeable thing ever.
I didn't think
slaughtering a white guy and pinning him to a fence would really rile them up that much. I mean, what did you think was going to happen, Louis?
Yeah.
Maybe predicting the future is not your strength.
So guys, I have a complaint about this episode, and I'm not a stranger to hate on the internet. So I know what I'm setting myself up for, because I'm sure a lot of the fans are going to not like me for this comment. I think. I don't know.
I mean, I already don't like you for it.
Yeah, maybe I'm just overreacting. But there's this scene, Christina, when Lestat is sitting with Antoinette, you know, when they're first hooking up. And she says, you know, they're talking about what they like or whatever. She, you know, says basically everyone thinks they're gay. And she says to Lestat, I like men called daddy.
Ugh.
And Lestat pours the champagne on her and says, bad daddy. fuck me. Come on.
You don't like that he embraced the term daddy?
No, no, no.
I mean, that's you got to go with what your lady wants.
I don't mind the, you know, he gave me face. I like that comment, but the
daddy you're okay shit. With, I gave this guy face, but guy calling face. Somebody daddy is just beyond the pale for you.
I don't know. I'm going to have to actually agree with you there. I think, yes. I think that line didn't come across for me at least. Right. And you're a second person who agrees with me, Joanne. It didn't come across as sexy as it maybe was meant to.
Like some writer was like, oh, let's put daddy in there. And they did. And it just didn't work.
The daddy thing, it seemed a little bit forced.
It's
in
a
that
little sense. Anachronistic. If I was writing it, I might have done it like where Lestat is a little more forceful and domineering at that point. Like, you know, he grabs her throat and says, yeah, I'll be your daddy.
Yeah. Right. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
that would have been like if he had been a little bit more.
Butch.
Yeah, and he wasn't.
Well,
you know what? I'm glad that you agree, Christina. Maybe I'll get some praise instead of some hate.
Well, you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion. And I mean, also everything else in that scene was pretty hot.
Yeah.
I mean, I was here for Lestat hooking up with Antoinette. And she was the equal opportunity person. She liked them all too. Yeah. So she was fine.
She was trying to get Louis to join in.
I know. She liked his burnished complexion. Yeah, like, I'm going to get something to eat.
Did you say burnished? Okay, I got to go.
I'm out. And that was another moment where Lestat made a funny joke. He said, oh, is the animal store still open?
Yeah. Okay. Is the animal market still open?
That is hilarious.
Let's talk about our standout characters for the episode. Mark, who was your standout character and why?
I'm going to say, and you know, I'm always a little contrarian here.
Don't steal mine.
Well, is yours the alderman?
No.
Okay. So that's my standout character because he's really, while obviously he's a minor character in terms of the story, he's really the impetus for this episode, right? His kind of scheming on the council is trying to take advantage of Louis in a business situation. He did die spectacularly. And so I'm going to go with and honestly, I think that guy's a very good actor.
John DiMaggio.
By the way, great name.
I wonder if he's related to Joe.
And so he's my standout character.
That's really cool, Mark. That's actually a pretty cool
choice. Not as douchey as my normal choice is.
Damn, no, I was going to choose him.
No, you weren't. Were you?
Well, maybe you should bump yourself up in the list.
I guess.
And go first.
All right. Well, you know what, Christina? While you're thinking of yours, since Mark stole yours, I'll go with mine. And my standout character this week, hands down, Lestat. And I'll get more into.
You just stole her second choice.
You stole my second one.
I'll get more into the whys when we go into the story, you know, the character arc.
Okay.
But obviously, one of not the most, but one of the more important reasons was there were just so many moments of humor from him. But more importantly, we really got to see the evil, true nature of Lestat come out, where last week I said, oh, he was just being romantic. Well, he's not being romantic anymore. And he's just, you know, we say that Louis was being manic. So was Lestat. He really devolved in this episode. And it was.
he's a jealous bitch.
I mean, yes. You know, when Louis said, oh, so I can fuck whoever I want. He's like, of course. Of course. Of course. Like the only one who didn't realize that he was lying through his fangs was Louis.
Yeah, because I mean, I was watching the actor, and he kind of did that little weird hesitation. It's like, of course, you know, yes.
Such
you can do that if you want to.
Sam Reed is just so, he's so good.
To support Joanne's choice here, the best scene I thought was when Louis comes back and there's a bunch of sailors in the room and they're singing war songs and Lestat is playing the piano and saying, you know, these all these boys want is a German on the end of their bayonet, you know, and it was just they had them marching around and, you know, and then, of course, obviously we did get to see two new magical powers.
What was that Jedi mind trick that he did?
Yeah. So we got to see two new magical powers this week, and we can talk about that in character development.
Yeah. Okay. My standout character. My gosh. Okay. So, well, let me talk about Daniel. I really believe that the alderman for me was my standout character, but let me talk about Daniel. And what was cool to see with Daniel was that he is letting down some barriers and questioning, and, you know, like he's asking tough questions, but he's also accepting, okay, these are trustworthy answers that you're giving me. And he's sort of giving some space and trying to build some trust. I think, you know, actually, as I'm talking about it, maybe he's more trying to build trust than he is trying to let down his own barrier.
That's what a good interviewer does,
yeah,
right?
They you're build not rapport. Wrong. He's building a
he's
rapport.
Seducing he's seducing Louis back as back. His interviewee. And while Louis is trying to seduce him to tell the story the way he wants it to be told. So that's an interesting little dynamic.
Yes, it is an interesting dynamic. So, okay. So that's, I think, what was really strong about Daniel's character. We didn't see him as much, I feel like, this episode. There's a lot going on in New Orleans.
Not a lot of flash forwards to the future this week.
Mm. All right. So we've been hinting at character arc a little bit here. So why don't we go ahead and start talking about character arc? Who should we do first? Lestat?
Yeah, let's do Lestat.
As I said, kind of in the beginning, in my hot take, here we are at a point where people have been together now. They're 7 years in. This is 1917.
It's itch time.
It's the itch time. And the facade it's dropped. I mean, that's been down. You know, they're not in the honeymoon period, but.
Yeah. He's leaving the door open while he's going to the bathroom. Yeah.
Now, the bloom is definitely off the rose. People are starting to show really their true colors. What is interesting about Lestat's character development is just this increasing show of selfishness.
Yeah.
There's multiple ways that Lestat is very selfish in this episode. He has a partner who is essentially coming to him and saying, look, I have a problem. I you know, in Louis's mind, you could easily put in some kind of an addiction.
Sure.
And Louis is saying, I'm stopping this. I need to stop this.
I'm going vegan.
And that's Sid. And Nancy is like, come on, no.
Yeah, come on. No, let's tie one off. And you know.
Then at a certain point, Lestat says, well, okay, fine. You know, it's going to be hard for you. And you know that Lestat isn't being supportive. He's just sitting there waiting for him to fail.
Yeah, he knows it's going to not go great.
He knows that it's, he knows that it's not going to go great. So I think that selfishness, the fact that Louis was bothered by the fact that he wanted an open relationship. That was not a mutual decision. That wasn't discussed.
Right.
It was just, I enjoy some variety, so I'm going to do it. Then selfish because he wouldn't let Louis go and do it. Kind of throughout this whole process in this episode, you see just much, much more selfishness, but also the manic side of him, creating that kind of revenge party with all of the soldiers.
Right.
When he's talking to Louis about Antoinette, he laughs at him.
Yeah.
It's like this
maniacally.
That crazy laugh. It was wild. Sam Reed is amazing as an actor. I just love to watch him. Just so Lestat to me. Again, his nickname becomes the Brat Prince.
He earned it in this episode.
You really see that coming through here, which is definitely not something that is as fully explored in the book.
Right.
Or the movie.
No, and they really flipped the script on this because, you know, in the book, Louis was the petulant little child. You know, now it was Lestat in this episode. He fell short of just stomping his feet. You know, when Louis and him have the confrontation and he said to him, oh, I'm not going to see Antoinette anymore. And he was all like pissy about it. But when they had the confrontation about Louis with the soldier out in the bayou and he asked, you know, are you jealous? And he's like, I heard your heart's dancing. And he gets like, oh my God.
Yeah, I was getting face, man. I mean, that if my heart's not dancing, I'm doing something wrong.
Or he is,
right.
But yeah, it was so good watching that side of Lestat come to life in this series. And Sam Reed, you just can't say it enough.
Oh, he's
so great.
Fantastic actor.
Can I just say one more thing? That the fact that Louis turns around and sees Lestat's boots and they've got mud on them. That is off brand for Lestat to have mud on his boots.
Right.
So he left them there knowing that Louis would see that. So he was, it's just another layer, I think, that just, you know, it forces that confrontation to happen.
Louis, every breath you take, every move you make, I'll be watching you. You're
watching me like a creeper.
Exactly. The one thing that I thought of when he walked in on, you know, Lestat with all the sailors and everything was, that's Lestat being the French bimbo.
Mm-hmm.
That's our friend Dorian's phrase for Lestat is, he's the French bimbo.
Mm-hmm.
And he was definitely bimboing it up in a couple of scenes, you know, with the singer and then obviously with all the 11 soldiers that are in his bedroom. And it just struck me as funny that this is another part of the Lestat character, that kind of libertine, you know, I do anything I want to make me feel good. My justification is for things is it gives me pleasure.
Yeah, he's a hedonist.
He's a total hedonist.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what about the scene where Louis's confronting all, I guess, the people he plays cards with, the councilman, the alderman, whatever they are. He suggests to him that he moves the business to Bourbon Street. And, you know, Louis pointed out, well, no one's going to sell me real estate. And he said, well, have Mr. Lioncourt front it. And very flippant.
Yes.
He goes, that's Louis's hobby. That's not his hobby. That's his business, you know?
Oh, dismissive is so correct.
Because he says, we have money. We don't need this, you know?
It is.
We're fine.
Right. And he just views it as like an abusive husband who views his wife's startup as a hobby, is not much. Like, he's just such a dick. And as much as I wouldn't.
Definitely would.
Well, I would date Lestat. But as much as I really wouldn't want to date Lestat, holy shit, it's so tough to watch how abusive he is, but it's also so delicious. It's just really building everything up to that big moment to come with Claudia and, you know, the killing of Lestat and everything. So it's just so good.
So the way that Lestat is treating Louis has been, right? I think that we can agree at this point that this relationship is toxic. Even though you were kind of fighting it last week, Joanne, you said by this episode, you can see it. I was going to say, even you can see it, Joanne.
Now I can see what I was saying about last week's episode is that it's more like we know that it's going to become toxic. So we were saying, I think you were saying it's toxic, but I don't think it was at that moment yet. Now it is. We know it's going to develop into toxicity, which
here we are.
Am I the only one who's just hearing Britney Spears toxic on replay in their head?
Yes, you are the only one.
All right now, every time we say the word toxic.
But what is happening, though, is that Louis is in an abusive relationship. He is. We can see it.
Yeah.
And
Daniel can see it.
And so what we're watching, what we're witnessing is Lestat essentially abusing a person, and Louis is going to be then suffering psychologically from that abuse. He has to. You don't go through a lengthy abusive relationship emotionally or whatever, physical, if it is physical, you don't go through that without coming out of it with some scars. And so we are seeing Louis's scarification in progress. And then in present day, Daniel's interviewing him, pushing the fact that, look, you were an abusive relationship. And Louis says, I don't consider myself abused.
Right. Well, of course you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Which means he's still in the headspace.
Yeah.
Which means who knows if this is a reliable. We still don't know if he's being a reliable narrator in this. We know
that he's not because of, you know, when we discuss Louis's character arc, I'm sure we're going to get into the whole Odyssey of Recollection situation.
That's right. And that's a little bit, it seems like it's kind of a way of saying, let me be in control of my own narrative. Let me tell my history the way I see it. Maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not. But he says things like, he says very certainly like, oh, yeah, and that's when he wrote Wolverine Blues, right? Then he goes, are you sure? It's like, yeah, maybe I'm misremembering, mm-hmm. right? So that does call into question the validity of his memories.
He does it again to him. Daniel did it again with the swamp and the rain.
And the rain.
Yeah. Is it raining? And he pictures it both ways and we don't know which is true.
Okay. Well, let's do Louis' character arc. Because I think, did we cover everything with Lestat?
One last thing I'd like to mention. We did see a new magical power that one of the vampire, well, we see two of them, but for Lestat, you see his kind of ability to mind control these drunk sailors. Are they sailors or soldiers?
I guess.
Because they have bayonets. But it costs him something, right? Because he starts bleeding out of his ears. So it's a fairly serious bit of effort. And we'll see if that comes into play later as well.
All right. So Louis's character arc.
Basically, Louis and Lestat, they're debating their humanity. And Louis kind of pressing Lestat about, you know, should they still, you do they need to kill humans? And this was Louis's first attempt, I think, at trying to, or not first, but one of many attempts of trying to reconcile being the vampire. He leads Lestat down, you know, this path of trying to only eat criminals. And, you know, they're going through all that. That was kind of the first look of that layer of Louis's humanity that he's just so desperately trying to hold on to.
So Louis's character is evolving in the sense that he's now dealing with all these losses that he's being dealt.
Well, I think it is loss, but it is also found, right? I love the way that you frame that in the beginning. While he is losing his humanity, he's also trying to find a comfort zone in his
little bit of balance.
Yeah, in his nature, right? So at the same time that he's letting go of one thing or kind of being forced to let go of the other thing, you know, sort of the true nature is pulling him with what he wants to try and maintain in his life, a connection, some kind of connection or reverence for human life. Right.
And they come right out and say that in the title of the show, what this show is about, is my very nature that of the devil. So it's clearly him struggling with what his nature is and what, you know, versus what he wants it to be.
Yep.
And he doesn't get a lot of support in this struggle, right? It's not like Lestat's like, yes, I went through the same thing, because he didn't.
You know, when Louis says it at the beginning about wanting to try to only eat criminals or whatever his suggestion was, and Lestat tries to be supportive and he plays along and he grabs the vagrant or whatever the guy was, the petty thief, and snaps his spine for Louis and kind of serves him up on a platter. And I laughed my ass off when he said this. He said, "Here's your criminal biscuit. How does it taste?" And even with that, Louis didn't even have to do any of the heavy lifting. And he just stared at him like even he couldn't even eat the criminal, you know, and said he grabbed poor kitty cat and, you know, devour that thing.
Here's the thing that makes the relationship toxic in that situation in my mind and reveals a lot about both of their characters. Joanne, it's exactly what you're saying and it's what we talked about before, which is that Lestat's not being supportive. It's not even that he's not being supportive. He's pretending to be supportive while all the while, even in that pretending, it's terribly unsupportive.
Yeah.
And so disabling this criminal in the way that he did was really distasteful.
Yeah,
he's just twitching. I snapped his spine. Do you mean to tell me that Lestat with his mind control powers has no other way to present that person to Louis to try and ease him into it?
But, you know, he's making fun of him the whole time, right? He's taunting him about his choices. Of course, Louis, when they flash forward, still denies when confronted with that. He's like, "Oh no, I was not a bad relationship. You know, I'm just telling you the story."
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lestat, he has a bad temper, and plus, I only bumped into the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I deserved it.
Yeah. He's like, I shouldn't have, you know, gone vegan on him, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so. But sort of saying, listen, I was hard to take.
Yeah.
I was really, I had a bad libido because I wasn't feeding the right way. So I kind of get why he would do what he did.
He's excusing it.
You know, he's making those excuses. So here's my thought on Louis's character arc. I think we don't see much of an arc. I think we are going to see a Louis who is just more polished, but his where he was with Lestat in that moment, he still hasn't healed from that. Right. So he is still a dangerous person. All of that trauma makes him a dangerous person, which makes him an unreliable narrator. So Daniel is sitting there and he still may not be getting the truth.
Yeah, but Christina, you don't think we saw much of an arc of Louis? I think we really did. I think.
Well, I mean, it's not an upward arc, right? It's a devolving spiral.
But absolutely. But it is still more layers of his character and the direction that led him to finding Claudia. This was a huge part of his character development. He went from wanting to just eat criminals and couldn't even do that. Then he starts slowly losing everything. Like we said, the loss of the episode, he loses his family. Then he loses his business. And then he essentially loses his freaking mind. And he confronts Alderman Fenwick, kills him, comes out with that damn sign, no whites allowed, colored only. He knew that was going to be a controversial moment. And he did it anyway. And Brickhouse or whatever her name is tries to warn him.
Bricktop.
And that all Bricktop. Thank you.
Wow. He is a Brickhouse, though. That is true.
He is a Brickhouse. But, so all of that is showing how he, went from that, I can't do it. I'm going to eat the kitty cat, to cutting off the alderman's ear, finally saying the words out loud, I'm a vampire. And then ultimately displaying his body with the whites only sign, which caused them to burn Storyville to the ground, which ultimately leads him to Claudia. So that's a huge chunk of his character development.
Tell me if this is an accurate characterization of how you would see that. It's not so much that was a character arc. That was a tantrum.
That was a tantrum. Well, and it's
no, but a character arc is character development, and that's character development.
What you're talking about is Louis had a busy episode. He had a busy, busy episode. There was a lot of stuff happening to him. But I would argue that the way he started, which is in a toxic relationship with Lestat, kind of losing touch with his humanity and feeling bad about that and grappling with that, to now rampaging and losing his temper and killing that guy. And then the final thing, which is finding Claudia. So he's going from toxic to toxic to really toxic, because now he thinks this is going to save him.
He thinks this is his redemption. I get that. But there is still, I think you're just missing the importance of.
No, I see it. His character is changing. His character is taking elements that are already there. Unless we say that his character arc could be from bad to worse, his character arc could be from bad to worse. But
he went from trying to be good to killing. Remember Louis said, or Lestat said to him, "Don't kill. People in town that they're going to notice that are missing." And not only does he do that, he puts the guy on display at Jackson Square.
If I was going to support Christina's position, which I am, of course, loath to do, but you can't really say that him losing his temper and murdering the alderman is any kind of arc, because he did the exact same thing the episode before, where he lost his temper and killed the solicitor or whoever he
for
killed.
Personal insult.
Okay, yeah. But an arc is in a straight line.
No, but I'm just saying that doesn't show change, right? That's just here's another example of how Louis loses his temper and does dumb shit. That's a continuation. Now, I actually believe that he did have you are seeing some of his arc, not a super dramatic arc, because that would be jarring.
Not as dramatic as Lestat, but you can make the same argument then about Lestat, that there wasn't much of an arc either.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think Lestat has changed much at all.
Their
relationship is now kind of devolving a little bit. I think that Louis is now just really sinking into the depths of trying to deal with being a vampire and not doing a very good job of it.
All right, well, look, we can agree to disagree. One more thing before we move on, guys. We forgot something in Louis's character arc, or lack thereof, however you want to put it. We forgot to talk about his superpower. We talked about Lestat's Jedi mind trick, but we got so heated about arc, no arc, crap. Get it?
That
we forgot to mention his mind fire flame situation he had going on there.
Yeah.
That was hot.
That's new.
He can start things on fire.
Yeah, pretty good.
Fire. Well, that's a good lead in, though, to Daniel, because that's how Louis demonstrates that power is that Daniel throws the tapes of the original interview away, and then Louis starts them on fire.
Yeah, Louis's like, in case you thought that was just a dramatic gesture and you're going to fish them out of the garbage, en flambé, my friend.
As far as his arc went, I was thinking one thing, but now that we had that conversation earlier about the fact that he is also in a situation where he's trying to build trust. And now think about that. Go back over the other episode. He sat there we talked about how Louis would, like how Louis was pushing his boundaries by presenting himself eating a fox.
Right.
Well, it could also be Daniel.
Fuck that fox, by
allowing that to happen consciously.
I was waiting for that.
Consciously kind of like toughing it out. Even if everything in him was saying that's fucked up, I don't want to watch this shit. But he allows it to play out just to build a sense of trust. So it could be it's seduction that's going both ways.
Yeah. And I think that is valid. And
or a chess game.
And I do agree that that shows an arc for Daniel, because if you remember in the first couple of episodes, he's really pretty antagonistic towards the whole idea, right? Why did you bring me here? Didn't we already do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and, how do I believe anything you say? Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of this episode,
I'm not your fucking boy.
What?
I'm not your fucking boy.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it was really more of a battle. But now Daniel is now remembering that as an interviewer, you do have to build rapport in order to get the truth. And he's realized that being antagonistic and petulant a little bit and angry isn't going to get him what he wants. And if he wants to get the real story and have Louis be a good truth teller, he's going to have to build some rapport.
Do you guys think that Louis is also trying, in his quest to build rapport and to, seduce Daniel, I think he's also trying to show Daniel we're a lot alike. And I think he does that in this episode by proving to Daniel about how recollection is tough for him when he tells the story about the Buick and the drug dealer. And in the other episode, in last week's episode, where he gets him to start reminiscing about the great love of his life with the ice cream. And I know that's all part of the seduction, but I think what we might see is a scene or part of a scene where Louis, says to him, like, we are alike. Like maybe Daniel's like, we're nothing alike. Daniel, I think Louis's trying to lead him down the road of, we've got a lot more in common than you think.
Initially, I saw it as like, oh, you want to call into question my recollection? Let's read one of yours. But I think you might be right. I think he may be trying to, as part of the seduction, have him identify more with this creature who is really very different from him, right? Mm-hmm. He's immortal, for one thing.
I think it's more than just whataboutism, because it's so deliberate the way it was written. So I think there's got to be a little more to it than just your basic, well, you did this, blah, blah, blah.
I was sad that there wasn't more of him in it.
I thought that the first time I watched it, I felt like there wasn't a lot of Daniel. But then the second time and the third time, I felt like there was. It just wasn't as impactful as other scenes. Definitely not as much as the second episode. We really got a lot of Daniel's screen time. I felt like there was more than I initially thought there was.
Honestly, I would like to see more Daniel scenes.
Yeah, me too.
But
me
I think
too.
Next week we're gonna be all Claudia all the time.
A lot of Claudia.
Guys, guess who my standout character for next week is?
It's probably we might have a threefer on next week too.
Is it a Fennec Fox?
it's the elusive Fennec Fox. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm giddy like a freaking kid on Christmas. I can't wait for Sunday morning.
All right. Well, speaking of Fennec Foxes, he was part of the body count last week.
He was.
And I'd like to pause now and thank our sponsor, Ratsniff Humane Pest Control, for sponsoring Body Count of the Week.
Rat Sniff Humane Pest Removal. Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night? Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement? Have you or your family ever seen a rat, raccoon, or vole? If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Come to Rat Sniffs on Basin Street and we will remove them without unsightly traps and poisons. Discreet deliveries of rodents are available to laboratories and keepers of exotic pets. No questions asked.
Let's see if I've gotten them.
I'm here to tell you if you don't.
Check me if I don't.
Ready, go.
Two rats.
Got them.
All right. Fluffy.
Clap, clap, kitty cat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hermie the dentist.
The dentist from Tallahassee. You are correct.
The alderman.
What's his full name?
That's an excellent question. You give it to me.
Alderman Fenwick.
Yes.
One more.
By the way, a very spectacular death, right? And then the gentleman who shall ever be known as walking down the street guy.
I have him written down as vagrant/criminal.
Yes. So he had the misfortune of thinking bad thoughts as he walked down the street.
So that's three. Well, four for Louis because of the two rats. So four for Louis and two for Lestat.
Right.
Before we move on, can we talk about the Uber Eats 1917 version? Like, what the hell was that?
That's rat right, sniff. That,
I know. I'm just saying, like, what the hell?
I don't think his character knew that he was delivering this to Louis to eat. He just may have thought it was.
No, but it was Louis's version of Uber Eats.
Yes. Like, oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's like, I like
that's how I get when they bring my Burger King. I'm like, yeah, just bring it around back. I'll be right out. Bring it around back. I'll be right
out. Joanne's in the alley chomping on cheeseburgers.
I got to finish giving this guy face and I'll meet you out back and bring my Burger King.
John, what would you say is your philosophy of life? You're like, lots of face and cheeseburgers.
Now,
should I have included the squirrel that was on Louis' chin?
No, because you didn't
see it.
The dog and the
yeah, it's got to be on scene.
You have to have it see it die. Yeah.
That's our rule.
I would like to give Rat part number two all the props because his death was much more interesting than the other CGI rat's death.
You think
this
so?
One, yeah, because this one kind of turned over on his back and like wiggled his leg.
Twitchy.
And you could see his mouth going.
Do you think he's going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actor?
Rat number two.
So on your to-do list today, I need you to animate the death throes of a rat in someone's mouth. He's like, all right, I'm on it. I got it.
Christina, final thoughts on episode three, is my very nature that of the devil?
Again, awesome episode. I thought that it moved the story forward, if not the character arcs. I'm very excited that Claudia was spotted at the end. I was fascinated with Lestat this week. And I know that it was really meant to be another one of Louis' episodes, but God, Sam Reed is just killing it as Lestat. He's hard to not watch. He, like, you can't take your eyes off of him. When he was playing his music several times throughout the episode, he was performing and singing, which also could be some foreshadowing for the vampire Lestat in a rock band. I don't know.
There's a lot of musical elements in this show with Lestat.
Sort of his performance, you know, that sort of performative nature. It was hard to take your eyes off of him. So I really enjoyed it. But also the way that you're seeing Louis losing touch with literally, I mean, you're really seeing it happen where he's losing touch with his humanity, with his family. They are now gone from his life. He's now admitted that he's a vampire, said it out loud. And, you know, that seems symbolic.
It made his character arc super interesting. Yeah.
That character, he was a very busy character. This episode did not have much of an arc. Okay. Joanne. What are your last thoughts, Joe?
Like I said at the beginning, loved the episode from, you know, the first scene of them sitting in the park debating about humanity and who to kill and how to kill them, to, of course, our beloved Claudia showing up. Just such a tease for one little second. I don't normally watch coming attractions on any show. It's just something quirky about me. But I did watch the coming attractions for next week. And as much as I loved this episode, I know I am going to just be completely obsessed with next week from what I happen to see. So, really good. very exciting. And I do, you know, I want to give a nod to the writers again for those brief little moments of humor that we get from Lestat, with the exception of Champagne Daddy.
I could have done Champagne Daddy.
Daddy was a bad boy.
please, no. Daddy.
Do you have a kiss for Daddy?
Oh, now that was sexy. Ferris Bueller saying, do you have a kiss for Daddy? That's hot as fuck.
Right.
Yeah, this was not. But Rollin Jones is, you know, the lead writer on this episode. And I think that I can definitely.
He's written a lot. Yeah. Has he written all the episodes so far?
The first.
So yeah.
And the first and the third. And yeah. His voice is very clearly imbued with reverence for the original text. It's not Absolutely. The same language, yeah. But I just know that he's getting it, and he's working hard to incorporate what makes sense.
So. Right.
And I know in my heart of hearts, he did not write Champagne Daddy.
That was the other You think it was improvised?
Well, no, he had a co-writer, Hannah Moscovich. You're going to pin it on Hannah?
Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah's fault.
What were you thinking,
okay, Hannah? Sorry, girl.
So for me, first of all, let's answer the question. I mean, they asked us a question. Let's answer it.
Oh.
Is your very nature, is it that of the devil? No. Because the devil doesn't doubt his evil, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't doubt what he wants. He doesn't dicker. He doesn't waver. He does what he wants. Now, if you want to ask that question about Lestat, yeah, your nature might be that of the devil, right? If it feels good, do it. It doesn't matter who it hurts. So to answer your question, Louis, no, you're definitely not the devil. And we do see this, a couple of interesting theories, you know, Louis losing things that connect him with humanity. And then trying at the end, we see him start to gain connection to his vampire nature. He's now, you pointed out, he embraced his vampire nature while he was killing the alderman. And now he lost so much, he's going to use Claudia now to give him some purpose in a vampire-y sort of way. Mm-hmm. I'll be also interested to see going forward if we get a little bit more of that Forrest Gumpism that you sort of see, where they keep stumbling into historical characters. Mm-hmm. So they had Jelly Roll Morton, who was a brilliant jazz musician at exactly that time. We know that Lestat has already brushed up against Mozart, but I am very excited to see, because you know there's going to be some character progression next week. Mm-hmm. Right. Because you can't stay unchanged by adding a third person to that dynamic.
Right.
And we're going to see how that where
more
that takes
toxic.
Us.
It's going to become.
Oh, it's
going to
be
toxic.
So toxic. It's going to be Three Mile Island, Chernobyl toxic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Mark, I remember the one episode you were saying that you really don't want to see that, you know, vampire Lestat, you know, rock star, whatever.
Oh, God. No.
And I think they're building up to it. I mean, because
he has so that many... level of charisma already. You don't have to be so on the nose and make him an MTV star. But I mean,
maybe they won't go that far, but they are really leaning into his love for music. So
right.
I cringe for you every time. I'm like, oh boy, it's going to really hurt my feelings when that happens. I think of you.
We're not
going
to see it this season. There's zero chance we're flashing forward to the 80s this season. Okay.
No, so, I hope not.
I mean, that would be a really jar.
They're moving along quickly, but not that quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now we're, 170 years later. Here we go. So we'll see.
All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed listening to our recap of the episode 3, Is My Very Nature That of the Devil? If you enjoyed us so much that you just can't get enough of us, you can follow us on Twitter @vampire_insider. You can also follow us individually. I am @justblocky_1. You can find Mark @MarkEatsPeach. And Christina is @ChristinaGenX. And we have a new Facebook page where we're going to be having some interesting discussions, and it's a chance for you to interact with us and give us your feedback, and we can discuss episodes and character arc and Easter eggs or whatever you want. And that is on Facebook, and you just need to search Vampire Insider. Good night, guys. Thank you.
Peace out, Cub Scout.
Bye.
As creepy as it is to call somebody daddy, it's creepier to call them father. Okay? You can't say, call me father.
I hear okay. you, daddy.
I mean, that's a whole different thing.
Well, except for Fleabag and Hot Priest.
I don't.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
I know the
maybe
show.
Some of our listeners, Joanne, did you watch it?
No, I didn't.
Well, maybe some of our listeners know what I'm talking about. And if you do, you will know that Hot Priest was referred to as father sometimes and still Hot Priest. Wow.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Okay. Vampire Insider is a Conceptual Ozone LLC podcast produced and edited by Christina LaRusso. Please direct all business inquiries to vampireinsider@gmail.com. All rights reserved.